Florida law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law attorney. With attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal Ask question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin. In studio with attorney Patrick Smith. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Joe. Happy Saturday.
All right, we're both here to help as many people as we can, and there are 52 minutes of straight non-commercial radio. So if you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number. Can be just about anything. 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. A lot of people got a letter in the mail this week about the census. So I'm going to ask Patrick here to talk about a little bit about the census and whether you have a legal obligation to respond to that. Well, I'm going to do that right now, though, so you're going to have to hold on for that answer. So I want to start the show by talking about special planning that you do for special circumstances and situations. So, Patrick, talk about, if you have a spendthrift in the family, you do a stretch distribution over a period of time. We talk about special needs. You have to create a special needs trust. Talk about addictions and how to plan for that. And if anybody has questions about any of those, we'd be glad to talk about it. But I wanted to talk about the evil in-law.
Sure.
Planning.
Sure.
Now, a lot of families have that. They have some dominant in-law that's going to just take over an inheritance, or they're totally going to control how it's spent. And they might spend it all on themselves when the inheritance was made or intended to be just for their child, not the in-law child or adult. So what are some of the planning techniques that you use when you confront it with an evil in-law situation?
Well, first of all, there's thousands of people out there listening right now, and they're saying, what evil in-law is he talking about? Odds are it's you. If you're not recognizing someone in the family who's the evil in-law, it's probably you. So one of the common things we do, because we see this all the time with...
Yeah, but you're the one giving away the money.
That's right.
So you don't want to give it away to an evil in-law.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, it's a situation where if you should encounter said evil in-law, a great way to set up this plan is what I call with a stagger distribution with a HIM standard. We like to get a trust created so that the... distribution's not outright, not in one lump sum to the spouse, and thereby much more subjectable to that evil in-law. We also like independent trustees. You and I do this all the time for clients because we're neutral parties. And in addition to being neutral parties, if they want to fight with us versus a member of the family, fighting with an attorney is a little bit like charging hell with a water pistol. What was the point? What were you trying to accomplish there? So I think with avoiding outright distributions, good independent trustee planning, I think you can do a lot to preserve the integrity of the estate plan from the influence of the evil in-law, as you stated.
All right, if you have a legal question, it's 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. If you have a legal question, it can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, health care surrogates. So, Patrick, suppose the evil in-law is so bad, they've not let the parents come see the grandchildren. They prevent all of that. And you just know when you give the money to your own child that the in-law is just going to do things with it you could never even dream of or want. So they decide to skip the child and just give directly to the grandchildren that they're being prevented from seeing.
See it all the time. So the it's the rarest of the four transfer taxes. You know, we have the income tax, the estate tax, the gift tax, and there's this sort of one that just lingers out there, and it's called the generation skipping transfer tax. And it's codified in Internal Revenue Code Section 2652. And a lot of tax professionals don't even refer to it as a tax. They refer to it as a penalty. Because unlike the other three taxes where there's credits, deductions, allowances, things that ameliorate the pinch of the tax, you don't get that with the GST. You either owe it or you don't. And when you owe it, you owe full freight. So we kind of have our first flat tax out there for those flat taxers. And it's a big pinch. And this happens anytime you leave money to someone two or more generations younger than you. And if the child has predeceased you, the grandchild here, then we have the predeceased ancestor rule. So we're not talking about that situation. The child is alive. You're skipping that child to avoid the evil in-laws you stated and going directly to the grandkids. Unless the estate's over the exemption, which is north of $11 million at this point, it's not a big deal. But you have to understand you're running risk of exposure to that because there is a way to optimally plan. So there's zero exposure to that. But a lot of times you just see people disinherit that side of the family altogether. And they say, we'll handle it informally. You know, we'll do an informal letter of instruction to one of the other heirs. Hey, when you can, try to get the money to these people. Be wary of the gift taxes. And handle it accordingly, because people are really concerned about in-laws. That's grow, and you're right. And when we see will contest cases, the contests are usually driven, the sort of powerhouse or the mitochondria of the contest is not usually the blood child. It's the spouse or the significant other of this blood child that's driving the conflict.
You know, I meet with clients all the time in their second or third marriage, and they're just recently married. They didn't have a premarital agreement. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the spousal right. If one of them died, what the spouse can do. And they'll often say, well, we would never do that to one another. You know, that would never happen. You
right.
know, I'm going to honor you wanting to give everything to your children, and I just know you're going to honor everything. And I say, well, look, listen, it's not always the surviving spouse that gets to make that choice. Amen. A lot of times the power of attorney that spouse is given the right to, and maybe this surviving spouse has slightly lost their capability to make good decisions, and there's a power of attorney out there, so the power of attorney exercises all these rights for them.
Well, and I have a case very similar to this, and a colleague of ours has a case very similar to this right now, where the situation is the spouse passed away, and the surviving spouse is incapacitated. So the successor trustee for that surviving spouse, it's a blended family, not a first marriage, has two bad choices to make. Do I not go after the elective share there under the spousal rights under 732-2035 and risk getting sued by my beneficiaries for wasting a trust asset potentially? Or do I just go ahead and tick off the family of the deceased spouse by bringing the elective share? Easily avoidable if people put together good prenuptial and postnuptial agreements that reduce that deriding, waiving those rights, and avoiding a lot of this conflict.
All right, we'll talk more about evil in-laws here in a few minutes. Let's go to Rose in Haines City.
Good morning.
Hey, Rose, do you listen to WLVF?
I do.
Hey, do you know, I forgot to check. No, I was there that Friday morning to help kick things off on Friday, but I never heard of the total amount they raised. Do you know what that would be?
It was over $200,000. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I want to say it was over $217,000. I know that
for sure.
All right.
Well, if somebody knows from 90.3 FM, they can give us a call. I'd love to know. Anyway, what can we do for you?
I have a question about giving money to your children. I would like to buy something for my son, and it costs like $30,000. So my question is...
Well, I mean, from your estate or now?
Now.
Okay.
What is the most that you can give your child in the course of a year?
Are you married?
No, I'm widowed.
Well, you can give him up to $11.4 million. You just have to report anything over $15,000.
So how do you report it?
You do a 709 gift tax return.
No, I don't think so.
No, that's what you would have to do.
Oh, that's what I would have to do. Okay.
Or you could give him $15,000 this year and wait till January 1st of next year and give him $15,000.
That's right.
And without any reporting.
Okay. Well, that's what I thought, and I wanted to be sure. But I could also give $15,000 to him and $15,000, say, to his wife.
You could, yes.
Year.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
And
okay,
if they have children, you could give more.
Well, and Rose, the $15,000, it's not limited to just children. It could be grandchildren. It could be a friend from church, maybe a favorite attorney you listen to on Saturday mornings. Anyone at all.
Anyone.
Is available.
I think the favorite attorney can accept gifts, though.
That's right. That's true. There are bar rules about that. So.
Well, Patrick Smith is my attorney, so.
All right.
Well, thanks for listening, Rose. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the invite. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney all about Florida law. And if you have a legal question, the phone lines are open. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Ask about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, real estate, family law, spousal rights, evil in-laws. We're going to cover it all if we can. And we're here just to help you in any way. So can a child contest if they were omitted from a will?
If they can afford the retainer, absolutely. The question is, I think, what's the likelihood of success on a contest? And you and I both know the two most common causes of action on a contest are lack of capacity. The parent didn't understand what they were signing. Here, sign this deed, and it turns out to be a will. Or undue influence, which we see all the time, countless times during the week, where someone's coming in and coercing the parent, and you just cancel the appointment. So absent evidence of that, we actually had a case recently where there was an audio clip where they called one of the financial brokerage houses, and they record those calls, and they let you know they're recording those calls. You can actually hear the influencer in the background
telling them what to say,
telling them exactly what to say. So I mean, it's the quintessential smoking gun. So I think with evidence like that, yeah, I mean, if you're bringing a suit, people do this all the time. They say, well, I'll just sue just to make trouble for them. Well, no, I mean, there's remedies for that for the other side called 57-105 motions, where if you're just bringing the suit with no evidence and you're going on a fishing expedition, there are consequences for not only the party bringing the suit, but the attorney bringing that suit can potentially face sanctions.
You know, we had a case like that, though, and we tried to get attorney fees from the other side on a frivolous charge that took forever. It took a year or so, didn't it?
Yes.
But we weren't successful in getting the other side to pay fees.
But that was also a case where the 57-105 motion didn't go through either. So we have also had one where the 57-105 was successful, and we did collect fees and sanctions. So it just depends on the facts.
And the judge.
Each judge is right. So each judge has their own way of doing it. But what I've learned in our 67 beautiful counties, there's 67 different ways, and even within those counties, there's different judges doing it different ways, but they're all right.
Absolutely.
They all do it the right way. So.
But some of them do get reversed on appeal, though.
No comment.
All right, hey, phone lines are open. Patrick and I could probably talk all 52 minutes, but we'd much rather help you. We come in to help as many people as we can. If you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open at 877-943-9673. And if you have a legal question, hey, you can also watch Patrick and I on Facebook Live. And we're also on WeBeamTV.com. On the Facebook Live, you can go to Ask an Attorney. I have an Ask an Attorney page, a Law Offices of Joseph Pippin page, and a personal page. We'd love to connect with you on any of those. We also have a YouTube channel where we post these shows. And along with other radio and TV things that we do, we post those on a YouTube channel. That's under Joseph Pippin. So, hey, if you want to catch up on something or you want to share our little conversation about evil in-laws with someone, you can just go there. And we also take questions and conversations and separate them from the whole show and post those on LinkedIn and other ways. So if you want to join us, you can join us on any of those things. And if you want to call today, it's 877-943-9673. And Patrick, you have a Twitter account?
It's Instagram.
Instagram account.
So you can follow us live if you're on Instagram and you want to follow us live. It's at Attorney Patrick Smith.
All right. So how many followers do you have there?
Currently we have 6 going.
No, I mean... Total.
Oh, total. It's over 500. We're working hard to get to the 1,000 mark. So.
All right. Well, help Patrick get to the 1,000 mark.
There you go.
There you go. And let's go to Gene in Pinellas County.
Good morning, Mr. Griffin.
Good morning.
And the other gentleman, I didn't get his name. I just turned my radio on.
Patrick Smith.
How do you do, Patrick?
Good morning.
Good morning. I just turned my radio on. I was listening to your comments about the child that was left out of a will.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very interesting. My question is, would you be able to offer an option as to a child that was adopted when he was 11 years old by a person, a gentleman?
Okay, so what's the
question?
And
that I was married to.
Yeah.
And then when the child was 12, let me start again. I'm sorry, I'm a little fuzzy. The child was adopted after he had a traumatic head injury on a Boy Scout trip to the World's Fair.
Hmm.
And I think that's pretty plain. So then later on, after like 11 years, and the adopted father fell into a few million dollars, which I didn't need or choose to do, but he did adopt the child. The child was disabled from the time he was 12. He was totally cut out of the will.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't pursued that because I'm more concerned about my child. But that was quite a few years ago, and there was no recognition at all that the child was disabled. He adopted him after he was disabled. And he was disabled during the marriage, I might add.
Okay, so a parent generally has no duty or obligation to leave money to a child or an adopted child.
Okay. I'm glad you helped me with that because it's been on my mind for a few years.
Yeah.
And
did the adoptive father die?
Oh, yes.
How many years ago?
About 10, 15 years ago, something like that. After all this happened, it wasn't a priority item on my list. I was trying to move on, take care of my family.
No, the adoptive father did not.
But I was curious.
Yeah, the adoptive father had no duty to leave to an adopted child or disabled adopted child. Patrick, do you have anything to that?
Well, I was going to ask a question on time. And just to clarify, the father that passed away, whose will we're speaking of today, is the party that adopted the child, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because it's a different rule if you're adopted away from someone. Like if I put a child up for adoption, that child has no expectation to inherit from me at all under any basis. So I just wanted to clarify that point. Did the adoption occur after the will was made or before?
The child was adopted, and then I guess the will was made years later.
Yeah, that's okay. And
I think
I support Joe's answer as being spot on, because the only sort of Hail Mary I was hoping for there is if the will had been made prior to the adoption, and then the adoption occurs, there may have been some claim as a pretermitted child, someone the father would have included the child in the will, but he wasn't the child's father at the time the will was made. So because of that timing, I think Joe's answers is the right one.
Now, if the father had died with no will...
Different ballgame.
Yeah, different ballgame. So if you were still married then, the spouse would have rights, and then the children would also have rights.
Well, there was another issue about, in the divorce, among other things, he tried to shoot my son without going into all the gory details, so it was pretty dicey. But we were married, I think you had to be married 10 years, and then because...
Well, that's a Social Security rule you're talking about there, right?
Well... No, it was an alimony issue that if I read in the in the law books that if in Social Security books that if you had a disabled child, you were still entitled to alimony and support for that child, and that was passed over also. So I was just curious about about the
will.
That
would be
over and done. I'm not resentful or anything. It would be I appreciate your helping me to clarify.
Okay.
So I can move on a little better.
All right. Well,
so at this point, there would be no resolution to this, whether a child's adopted or not, if the father doesn't choose to, or I guess the mother as well.
Well, unless there was an alimony or child support obligation in the post-marital settlement.
Yes, he was supposed to. Five judges ordered him to put up a $50,000 insurance policy in the event of his death. Yeah. Went through the, you know.
Yeah, but see, you should have filed a claim on the estate upon death with 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I didn't have. I should have had the Pippins and the Patricks, you know, but I didn't.
All right. So, well, hey, now you have peace of mind, so we're glad to help you that way. So.
Well, I've always had that, but I heard your program and I appreciate your help.
Well, my
thank
pleasure.
You so
All right,
much.
My pleasure. Let's go to Dwayne in Plant City. Hey, Dwayne.
Yes. Hello.
Yes. Yeah, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Hi. I have a question about the death of my father. He passed away about 6 years ago. Hmm. He was on Zantac, but otherwise very strong and healthy. He was 84 when he passed away because he had developed stomach cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I am trying to determine whether or not I should pursue a wrongful death suit. And just wondered if you had any advice for that.
I think the statute of limitations on that, is it 2 years or 4 years, Patrick?
I believe it's four, but I would bounce him to a PI attorney for a wrongful death analysis on that case.
We think it's 6 years the statute of limitations has passed.
Okay.
We can, if you want to email me, I can give you the name of a personal injury attorney who would think that's the type of an attorney, or a wrongful death personal injury attorney. I can give you the name of one you can talk to.
Okay.
When the statute of limitations starts to run, that comes into play of when the exact date would have been. So I'd be glad to give you the name of someone to talk to. If you want to email me at joe@attypip.com.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. Phone lines are open. If you want to call, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney, along with Patrick Smith, practicing attorney. We're here not to practice, but to help you in any way we can with your legal question. All you have to do is to call the toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Bob in Sarasota. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Joe?
Doing best day ever.
Best day ever, right. When you open your eyes, it's a good day.
There you go.
Anyway, I have a question pertaining to trusts and POA. I'll give you some detail and see where we end up. My wife is suffering from dementia, so I am the power of attorney. We have all our documents in place. We have a trust and a will, and
is it a joint trust where you both grantors?
It's not a joint. No, no.
Okay.
Trust. She has hers. I have mine.
Okay.
And I have been going to the bank. I'm trying to retitle a couple of her bank accounts in with the trust as the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm going to need to exercise power of attorney to do that because she's unable to sign or so forth and so on. But the bank is telling me that I have to have a power of attorney specified within the trust document. Mm-hmm. I've talked to a couple other attorneys.
No, let me say this. I think the power of attorney should have a paragraph that gives you the power to change things to the trust. But what the trust says has nothing to do with transferring the account from using the power of attorney to the trust. Are you there?
Document, yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. I guess what I'm understanding you to say is the trust document does not need to be changed to include a power of attorney. Is that correct?
Well, no, they're totally two separate things. The trust controls what you can get in the trust, and the power of attorney has, if it's properly done, I mean, we'd have to see the power of attorney to advise you whether it's a good power of attorney or not. But the trust controls what's in the trust, and the power of attorney gives you power over all other things if it's done properly.
So how would I do what I want to do then? I guess maybe I'm missing the point here, what you're saying.
Well, I'd probably have meet... How long ago was the power of attorney done?
Pretty recently, actually.
And by an attorney?
By an attorney. Yes,
well, if I were you, I would go back to that attorney and have that attorney show you the paragraph that gives you the power to change this account to the trust, and then have the attorney be an advocate for you at the bank, if necessary.
All right.
And then on top of that, what I would suggest you do, Bob, is follow up with your attorney about the successor trustee's provisions within the trust. So if wife's developed dementia, there's going to be language in the trust, like in our instrument commonly, it says, upon the statement of two licensed doctors of medicine, the successor trustee takes over.
That's in the document.
So what the bank's probably trying to allude to, you know, banks are great and they do a lot of great banking, but they're terrible at giving legal advice. So what they're probably trying to tell you is there needs to be a successor trustee appointed in light of the wife's incapacity. So you're going to be wearing two different hats. One is the power of attorney.
I'm the successor trustee also, and that is specified.
But have you become the trustee?
You've got to have that paperwork, exactly.
In other words, in order to become the trustee, I have to have these letters from the doctors. Is that
Well, it depends on what your trust says, but that's what our trust says, that two doctors for... There are three ways a successor moves into action. They have a death certificate. The person is capable of resigning who created the trust and allow the successor trustee to take over now, or two doctors who state they're unable to handle their financial affairs.
Okay. So, all right. It sounds like in my situation, the two doctors is the correct route to go.
Yeah, so then you would take that to an attorney who would do kind of an amendment to the trust and have you sign something as acceptance of trustee.
All right. Okay. That's clear.
All right.
That's clear, and I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. Hey, we're here to help. All right, thank you. Here to help as many people as we can. We're more than halfway through the show. If you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Let's go to Maryland and St. Petersburg. Maryland, you need to cut your radio off in the background there, please.
Okay. All right.
All right, what can we do for you?
This is a very, important question for me, but it may seem a little nitpicky. I am from the North, and I majored in sociology as a teacher and all that kind of thing. But I'm a Christian, and I'm in a church that majors in people past the early 50s being called Miss or Mister. And, of course, I've lived, growing up, learning that Miss or Mister goes before last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that part of American law is that people don't have the right to change other people's names. And the Bible does say abide by the law of the land. Now, I'm...
So you're thinking calling somebody Mr. changes their name?
No, that's not the situation. It majors in being in a senior situation and not active much more. And anyone from, like, the early 50s up. And so I grew up learning that to show respect, you put Miss or Mr. in front of last name. And that there's a first name fellowship, a first name respect. How in the Bible we're called sons and daughters of God and all that kind of thing. And so I've asked the people to just call me by my first name. And they've continued saying that's the way it has to be done down here in the South. And again, I'm from the North. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that my major in college was sociology. And my main major, I've also been like a Bible study teacher.
Ma'am, let me say this. If somebody doesn't call you by the name that you feel comfortable with, then tell them you prefer not to be their friend.
Not to be their friend.
Or not to talk to them. I mean, Well, that doesn't sound like a very Christian thing to do, but if it aggravates you that somebody doesn't address you the way you want to be addressed, then just don't talk to that person, because you can't
It's not a matter of aggravation. It's a matter of trying to identify and be part of the fellowship. Mm-hmm. And it's just been so repeatedly uncomfortable that people act like it is just because it's in the South, it's legally necessary.
No, it's not legally necessary.
Right. And so I don't know. Again, abide by the law of the land.
No, there's no law concerning your question, though.
Well, I've asked. It's a matter. I've been told by a deputy sheriff that a sheriff's deputy that if anyone calls you something more than once that you don't want to be called, that if someone hears it, they can be a witness that your name has been changed, especially if you've asked. It's something that's made me feel like a stranger and not part of the family of that church. And it has become very serious. And when I've asked them not to do it, they're becoming angry.
Yeah.
Like I'm sacrilegious or something, and tell me that that's the way it is done here in the South, because we're showing respect. And it doesn't seem family-like to keep putting Miss and Mister when the Bible says we're sons and daughters of God.
All right. Hey, Marilyn, you mentioned a couple of times now you're a Christian, and I'll remind you that that means you're a follower of Christ. And when he was here on the earth, he was called some pretty nasty names that certainly weren't his name. And remember what he did.
But it wasn't in the middle of his fellowship group.
Well, no, it actually was. I remember it was Judas, one of his own disciples, who betrayed him. And what he did was he turned the other cheek. And he trusted that his Father in heaven would be his vindicator. So I would encourage you to do that. Just show grace to the person doing this, like Jesus showed us all grace, and move forward. And what do you do for fun, Marilyn, when you're not scouring the law books on name issues? What do you do when you're just trying to have a good time and cut loose a little bit?
Well, just relax and be family fellowship within the family of God.
Yeah. Hey, Marilyn, I would be glad to talk to you off the air if you'd like to, but I have people waiting to move on here, so I've taken more time with you than I have for most, which I was glad to do, but I need to move on. But I really I appreciate you calling. Let's go to Jacob in Tampa.
Hey, sir, can you hear me?
I can. What can we do for you?
Yes, sir. I got a quick question for you. My mother-in-law, she has pancreatic cancer, so the prognosis isn't good. Thank God she's doing really well with it, but we have some legal questions for you. My wife, she has a brother. That's all there is her and the brother. Now, when my mother-in-law passes away, she wants the home to be sold and separated. She owns a home up in Connecticut. She wants the home to be sold and the money to be separated, which is fine. But the problem we have is the brother-in-law, lives with my mother-in-law. He is 40 years old, but he lives with the mother-in-law. So my wife is wondering, in the event that the mother-in-law passes away, the brother-in-law is going to be in that. We do. Can we actually, like, evict him? Or it's what would we
this
have
is
to
in
do
Connecticut, right?
Away?
Well, do you know who the personal representative, executor, trustee of your mother-in-law's estate is?
That is my wife, yes.
Okay, well...
Because the brother-in-law is not... He's no position to take care of anything.
All right, so your wife would have the right to evict him, force him to leave and sell the property. He doesn't have any rights of ownership or rights to stay there just because... Now, this is Florida law, basically, so I don't know if there's any unique laws in Connecticut I don't know about, but... Patrick, you want to add to that?
No, I think that if he's not willing to vacate the property for the purposes of carrying out the deceased wishes, you eject him. The eviction would be if there was a written lease.
I take it he doesn't have money to buy the house.
Or a lease.
Correct. He has no income at all. He's unemployed. Always been unemployed the 10 years I've been married to my wife. But that's my wife's main concern, is he ain't going to want to leave when mother-in-law passes away.
No,
she don't know.
He can be forced to leave.
That's what she was wondering. All right. Well, that's what I was wondering, my good man. You guys are awesome. I always wanted to call in. It's the first time I ever did.
Well, thanks. Thanks for doing so. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You guys keep up the good work. Appreciate it.
All right. So let's go to Paul in Tampa. Hey, Paul.
Hey, good morning. Question. I'm calling my wife's parents, my in-laws. Both of them, one has dementia, the other one has Alzheimer's. And they're at the point where we need to look at putting them in assisted living. They have a trust, but the way it's set up is the father, which has dementia, is a trustee, then it goes to the mother with Alzheimer's, then it goes to my wife. If they're not willing to check themselves into assisted living, how would we go about, you know, moving forward with my wife becoming the power of attorney for them, because she is in that succession power of attorney also.
All right, well, the power of attorney is effective as soon as it was signed. So if they've given your wife or the power of attorney, she's got that power. As far as the two of them as trustees of the trust, you just need two doctor's letters on both of them. They're unable to handle their affairs.
Okay, because I believe my mother-in-law would just sign it over because she realizes that she can't.
Well, she can voluntarily sign, and then if he doesn't want to sign, you just need the two doctor's letters.
Okay, but being she's already got the power of attorney through the letter.
Power of attorney has nothing to do with the trust, though.
Okay. All right, I appreciate
that. So, and I would approach the doctor by, I know you want to do what's in the best interest of your client, so we need to protect their money so they can pay you and others. And to do that, I need just a simple sentence from you. They're unable to handle their financial affairs.
Yeah, because the one doctor is kind of like, you know, because we talked to him about it. Because one of their primaries says that they don't need to be on their own. And, you know, but the other doctor was saying, you know, that ought to come from an attorney saying that he's not fit. So I believe it's got to come from him.
Well, and remember, Paul, too, the power of attorneys haven't been issued. They're not – power of attorney is not something you get over someone. It's something that's granted by that person. So if there's no valid power of attorney in place
– No, I think it is, though.
Yeah, saying if the power of attorney is not valid – because we've run into that issue where people think they have a current valid power of attorney. It's not. It's a do-it-yourselfer. Then the option would be guardianship. So just know that – plant that in the back of your mind. And by the way, Paul, while we got you, has anyone ever changed your name?
No.
Okay. Your name reminded me of a famous case years ago. It was in all the papers where a guy's name changed from Saul to Paul. So it reminded me of another caller. Never mind. Paul, I appreciate you taking that time to answer that question for me. Thank you.
Not a problem. Y'all have a great day. I appreciate the help.
All right. While I'm thinking about it, we're going to go to Mike. Well, let's go to Mike, then I'll ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
Mike, what can we do for you? Mike in Tampa.
Good morning. So my wife and I were separated. We own a company, transportation company. It's an S Corp corporation. She left last April. She doesn't want to be married. She didn't want the house. She sent me a text message. You can do whatever you want with a business and the house. I don't care. I don't want to be married to you no more. But we made money last year through the company. And she filed her taxes, and she told the CPA that she made no money from the corporation, which was a bold-faced lie because she did make money. She went into the bank and pulled the equivalent of about $4,000 from the commercial account. So she... her CPA is going to have to amend the taxes. Now, she wants me to pay the whole thing, and she said she's only... she feels like I'm blackballing her, but what do you think? I mean, even though she didn't live with me for like 8 months,
let me ask
I still
you,
make the mortgage payment all right,
Mike,
and all the other payments.
Let me ask you this, and I'll tell you what I think you should do, then Patrick can tell you what he thinks you should do. I think you should. Do you have an attorney?
No.
So I would choose an attorney to go in to tell him what you want, which is a post-marital property settlement type of an agreement, and have it prepared to where she wants the divorce, and you're going to go along with that. Although I would tell you to try to get counseling to save the marriage would be my first step, but assuming that let me finish, and then you can talk. So then I would have the attorney prepare a property post-marital property settlement agreement where she agrees to the divorce, and she agrees to give you the home, and she agrees to give you the business, and you have no obligation to her whatsoever. And then I would take that to her to get her to sign it. And then you have everything, and then the taxes are really a non-issue to fight about, because now you have the home and the business, and that would settle the case. And Patrick, what would you say?
No, that's exactly it. You just need good attorneys involved, because you got to put this in black and white, because right now it's...
Don't get hung up on the taxes. Get hung up on getting the business and the home.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's my thought.
Right, and I've at one time I made her a proposition. I said, I'd give you $15,000 cash, walk away, sign the house over to me. I'll make the payments. I'll pay the vehicles. I'll pay for everything, and I'll give you $15,000 cash. She was a little money hungry. She's like, no. So now, I'm willing to offer her $3,000, walk away. She's already lost, because she walked away and gave me that text message that I could do with the business in the house, whatever I wanted.
Yeah, that's what I was responding to, really, was that text.
Right. So, right. Go back, I pleaded with her for us to go to counseling. I have prayed and fasted and asked God, and but we've been estranged for 2 years. She wants nothing less than a divorce, and she's told me so.
I've more than several times in my career, I've volunteered without a fee to counsel with a husband and counsel with a wife, and have seven meetings, and have on the seventh meeting have them both together trying to save their marriage. I was doing that in my church. I don't know, I've done that several times, and that would be always my first choice for a person, is to try to save their marriage. But the answer I gave you, if that's just going to be impossible, and now she's done a fraudulent tax return, basically, and the way to settle it would be for her to do what she said in the text, give you everything, and then you'd be done.
Right. Okay. I wish you would have been my counselor back then, because I went to a counselor. This guy, I grew up in New York, and part of my life was in New York City, and this guy starts, he was a marriage counselor, but he pointed his finger at me, and he said, most of the fault lies with you. He starts to get belligerent with me, and as a New Yorker, I was like, you know, I don't have to put up with this BS. And I got up, he's screaming at me. This is a church marriage counselor.
Yeah, well, the key to counseling is forgiveness of the past and moving forward with a plan for the future. It's the way I think about it.
Yeah. Now, this guy told me it was all my fault, and he didn't even know Jack Wagon from what he was talking about, where I was coming from. But anyway, I appreciate the call. You taking my phone call, and it gives me more clarity. I'll present it to her. I'll tell her, hey, you know, here's $2,000 for your efforts. And if it wasn't for me anyways, we wouldn't have the house or the business, because she didn't want a house. She didn't want the commitment, and she didn't want a business. So,
all right.
I have struggled.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
All right, Mike, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. So if you'd like to contact our office, we have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. I'll go to extension 200, 1-800-226-3529. If you'd like to email us, and we have a poster sheet that we'd love to mail to you about estate planning. It's a full-size poster sheet with all of our offices and phone numbers and addresses of the locations we have on one side and five articles on estate planning on the other side. It has both my information on there and Patrick Smith's information on there. If you like that, we'd love to mail it to you. You have a three ways to get it. You can call the toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529, extension 200. You can email me at Joe, J-O-E, at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P.com. You can text me at 727-667-3967. Patrick, give your information.
So you can reach me via email at patricksmith at attypip.com, on Instagram at attorney Patrick Smith, and it's the same on Facebook as well. Pinellas County, 727-586-3306, extension 306, and in the Lake Marion and Sumter County areas, 352-241-8760.
And Instagram?
At Attorney Patrick Smith.
All right, so Patrick here, I had a case this week, and here's pretty much what happened. I reviewed a trust from another state.
Okay.
It was just signed and notarized. You had a few of those? No witnesses.
All the time.
Okay. One of the problems with this was an attorney had done a deed for a Florida property to this trust.
Without a Florida law license.
Without a Florida law license. But that really wasn't the main issue, I didn't think, because a trust has to be witnessed and notarized in the same formality as the deed.
Correct.
So there were no witnesses on the trust, just notarized.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you have done? And I'll tell you what I did.
Okay, so it was an out-of-state trust.
Mm-hmm.
Witnesses, no witnesses, just...
Well, now they've moved to Florida, though. So
now they're Florida residents. Mm-hmm. So the trust, was that a valid execution of the trust under the laws?
Well, I didn't check, but let's assume it was.
So if it was, I'd just say you do what I like to call a domestication of a foreign trust through restatement. I think it cures any potential error in execution. It allows you to keep the original title of the mm-hmm. trust. So if they have all those brokerage and banking and pieces of real estate in that trust, the title stays the same. We can hollow out all the out-of-state language, plug in good Florida language to protect Florida homestead, and make any other statutory updates and do it in the most efficient way possible.
Okay. I did that. I did a restatement.
You got it right.
But I also... Well, thank you. But I also, in addition to that, I did a corrective deed.
I would have to.
Yeah.
I think that's the right answer.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think any time you do the restatement and it was prepared by an attorney not licensed for the practice of law in this state in an abundance of was that deed recorded, by the way?
Yes.
Then I think you had to.
Yeah.
I think you'd have a choice.
Yeah. So. All right, so let's do the census. Do you have a legal obligation to complete a census?
Yes, and if you choose not to play this game, you will go home with a bill for $100, which is a fine. And if you choose to play the game and you give incorrect answers, the fine goes up to $500. Now, 1976 was when they changed it. It used to be, if you chose not to play the game, you were good for 60 days in prison.
Have you ever heard of anyone going to prison or being fined, though?
Not yet, but here's hope, you know, because I'm not going to respond this year, and I'll let you know how it is on the inside.
All right, so here's the question I had yesterday. So I was in the Westview Ridge giving a presentation to a great group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Patrick and I are both available for speaking engagements, and we talk a little bit and answer questions from the audience, just like ask an attorney. This guy says, well, look, I'm a resident of up north. Let's say New York. I'm a resident of New York.
Mm-hmm.
I get this letter in the mail addressed to resident. Didn't even have his name on it.
Right.
So do I, being a resident of New York, have to fill this form out that I received in Florida to this address?
No. When we had this question earlier, they cannot legally change his name to resident. So,
no, but does he have an obligation to do the census?
I think
being a Florida snowbird.
Yeah, I think he has an obligation to complete the census. I don't know that he has an obligation to complete it as a Florida resident. I think he has, you know, pick one. Do one for New York or do one for Florida. Don't do both, obviously. And at the end of the day, I think that's the point, is that you want to make sure that everybody gets counted.
All right, you've been listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. We're here every week this time. And we're here to help as many people as we possibly can. So stay tuned or come back next week for another version of Ask an Attorney all about Florida law. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Joe, thanks for having me. Everyone be safe from this coronavirus out there, okay?
All right. Take care.